Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 376. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to the pre-med years. Thank you for taking some time to join me today. If you can't hear, I'm battling a little bit of a cold, but hopefully we'll get through this intro and get you into a great conversation that I had with Enrique Hasso, the Associate Director and Podcast Host at Texas Health Education Service. Now, the Texas Health Education Service is actually the kind of overarching company, the organization that runs TMDSAS, which you know about, and JAMP, which you might not know about. It's more special for undergrad students in Texas, but it's a great organization that is really shaping a lot of what's going on in the medical world in Texas, both for medical school, dental school, veterinary school, and maybe some more in the future. Now, I was in Austin at the Texas Health Education Service offices and stopped by and had a great conversation with Enrique about everything that they are doing. And this is what you're going to hear today. Now, the audio is a little bit different. I was wearing a lapel microphone for video recording, but it's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. We start kind of in the middle of the beginning of the conversation where I was talking to Enrique about why they were thinking about going to the UC Davis conference to recruit students and educate students about the TMDSAS.
No. Why would you go? Because it's not like you're lacking for applicants. Are you just hoping for like potentially meeting that one student who's going to cure cancer and you want them to do it here in Texas?
So when I'm talking about a big presence, I'm talking like close to 300 applicants at each one of these schools. So 300 applicants at BYU.
Correct.
And UCLA.
Correct. So, but they're applying here, so why go and say hello?
So we really want to educate these students on how to get this because it is very unique. And
it's very special.
It's very special.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like MCAS or COMAS where all of the advisors have a streamlined source back to the application service when they're out of state. For TMDSAS, we're very much focused on Texas schools. And through our annual organization meeting with TAP, the Texas Association of Advisors for Health Professions, we provide updates for Texas advisors, mm-hmm. but that information doesn't necessarily reach out of state
okay.
advisors. And so when an out-of-state advisor has 300 applicants to an application service they're not very familiar with.
Yeah.
I think it's incumbent on us to educate those advisors and educate those students on how to put their best foot forward in the TMDCS application.
Okay.
And really understand kind of the nuances of the application, how to leverage those in their favor.
Okay. Do you think a lot of the students are applying because they are price shopping and they go, oh, Texas is cheap, let me apply to Texas? Or, oh, Texas' standards are a little bit less, not a ton less than the standard AMCAS, and my stats are decent. And they don't really understand the whole 90-10 kind of law with residency or out-of-state.
Yeah. Surely that plays a factor, but it's very much focused geographically to those areas that I believe they just might have a better recruitment system for Texas students who go and study there for their undergrad career. And then those students want to come back to Texas because the price is
higher. The undergrad is recruiting high school students from Texas.
Right.
Okay.
And we see a lot of that because...
And obviously BYU's big Mormon population. Does Texas have a big Mormon population? Do you know? Not sure.
I wouldn't know exactly.
You don't know the stats off the top of your head? Yeah.
But according to TMDSA, yes, you know, they're a very large school. And Utah Valley is another large school out of state. And of course, the California schools.
Yeah. And California makes sense just because there's so many students and they're just looking to go anywhere.
Right.
So that's interesting. Do you have data? This is always one of my things when I talk to students who are applying to out-of-state public schools and they go, oh, well, they accept 25% out-of-state or whatever. Obviously, Texas max is 10. Mm-hmm. Do you have any data? Let me finish my other thought. So the one thing I talk to students about all the time is that you have no idea who those out-of-state students are that they are accepting. They don't publish any data that says 3/4 of the out-of-state students that we accepted have super strong ties to our state. Their aunt or uncle lives in the state and they come and visit every year. They grew up in the state but left and no longer have residency in the state. Do you have that sort of data for TMDSAS and say the 10% of out-of-state students, like most of them still have really strong ties to Texas?
It's very difficult to quantify that to produce something at that level. But it's definitely one of the areas that we're trying to improve through the Texas Health Education Service, because we have so many questions from out of state students on, you know, what does competitive look like for an out-of-state student in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely working on producing enhanced statistics focused on that out-of-state population.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely suggest that applicants look into making a connection with Texas in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You can't just come in and say, hey, I want to come to Texas. I mean, it's...
I didn't see on the application service, because I opened it and played with it this year, I didn't see like size of pickup truck, because I know that really is a strong tie to Texas. Also, you have to have a really
belt buckle
and boots. Yeah. Boots and cowboy hat.
Yeah, and the boots have to be a special
You're a Texan.
Yeah.
So I'm part of the applicant. Again, I'm trying to think when I opened up the application, any student can go and open up an application. Do you ask for like where you went to high school, that kind of stuff, to get that sort of?
Yes.
Okay.
High school information is requested as SAT and ACT scores.
Yep.
Those are requested.
So you have high school. So potentially you could say out of the 10% out of state students, 1/4 of them went to high school here. So you could potentially pull that data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Talk about, a lot of students don't really understand why residency matters. Why does it matter to the Texas Health Education Service and TMDSAS and the medical schools and the state of Texas overall that only 10% of students can be from out of state?
That's the reason why Texas tuition is so cheap, is because the state legislature actually provides for the tuition. And so they are able to subsidize the overall tuition levels. So that brings it way down.
Yeah.
And so it's Texas taxpayer money going into that.
Okay.
So that's where the requirement for Texas residency comes in.
Yeah.
And that's why the mission of so many schools is that people have a strong tie to Texas, because, I mean, it's so heavily subsidized by the legislature. And you can see that just in an MSAR, just the tuition rates for Texas schools compared to, you know, anywhere else. Yeah. Not only is Texas perfect and amazing, but we have great tuition rates.
Some parts. Yeah. Some parts perfect and amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something a lot of students don't understand is the in-state tuition versus out-of-state tuition for any medical school. That's usually the case, is that the medical school isn't making money off of the out-of-state student. The cost difference is what the state is subsidizing versus for an in-state student versus an out-of-state student, where money's not coming from the state. The school's making that up directly from the student. I don't know if that's how it is in Texas, but I've had that conversation with other schools. Mm-hmm. As to why that difference is there.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Okay. So with Texas having its own application service, how do you see that playing out in the long game with more medical schools opening, with a lack of residency spots? Is that something you guys are actively looking at to say, how many more medical schools can we sustain in Texas? Yeah. Do you have any sort of ability to maybe take some of that taxpayer money and fund residencies just for Texas medical students? Mm-hmm. Is that something you're looking at?
Not through TMDSAS, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, our mission is to provide the applications to the schools.
Yeah.
And so that's the primary focus for it. But I will say that the schools, through the platform that TMDSAS has built, the schools are in communication with each other and do speak before the Texas legislature and Senate to discuss those issues with residency positions in Texas. And so every time we turn around and two new medical schools pop up, the medical schools are there talking about the issue that we don't need more medical schools. We need more medical residencies.
Yeah.
And so as more schools are coming up, that's actually coming to the forefront of public opinion, is that residency positions are not catching up as quickly as medical schools are being built.
Texas is huge. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very big state. Mm-hmm. Lots of rural areas.
Yeah.
And I think I had a pediatrician on Specialty Stories podcast, and she's like the only pediatrician in like a 75,000 square mile, some ridiculous, I don't know if this is the real number, like the only pediatrician in that area. Is that something, as Texas Health Education Service, is that something you look at to provide resources for students coming from those areas, potentially looking at helping those areas?
So what we want to do is enhance everything that the schools are already providing. And a lot of medical schools have built into their mission that they want to reach out to rural health. Students interested in providing rural health. So, for example, the Texas Tech University system is based in Lubbock, Texas, which, I mean, Lubbock's pretty much a middle of a lot of rural areas and communities. And so they've actually built a system around the Amarillo, Midland, Odessa area and Abilene area. And so they're working together with different rural centers that can really enhance their mission that way. And so what we can do to step in is to inform students that these programs exist and amplify the messages that they're trying to provide so that they can enhance their programs in turn.
Nice.
And so through that, you know, we're working with organizations like the Texas Rural Health Association in connecting, you know, the professional aspect backwards to the undergraduate experience and even a little bit further, maybe to even the high school experience.
Yeah. Random question. Do you have any data about students who go to medical school here who actually stay in practice, at least at some point?
At TMDSAS, we don't.
Yeah.
Through JAMP, they're actually starting to work on that information. Yeah. JAMP's been in place since 2003. And so there are, I believe, 8 years of students who have now graduated from residency programs and are now practicing. And we've teamed up with the Texas Medical Association to start, you know, getting better tracking of where students are being placed and where they're practicing.
Yeah. Talk about JAMP. What is JAMP?
So JAMP is a program that was created by the Texas legislature in 2001 that helps economically disadvantaged students find a pathway to medical school. So everybody knows that it's expensive to go to medical school. You know, you have your MCAT test, you need support, you need the ends, you need shadowing experiences. Yep. And unfortunately, a lot of those cost money. And for economically disadvantaged students, it's a huge hurdle.
Yep.
And so the program was established to mitigate that issue. So what JAMP provides are summer internship programs are 5 weeks long at the medical schools. And okay. The students actually go and live at the medical school, and they're taking classes at the medical school level. They're shadowing doctors. They are participating in those communities and learning about the mission of the schools that they're attending.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we have a partnership with Kaplan to provide them a full MCAT preparation suite.
Nice.
And when the students take the MCAT, they have to hit a certain threshold. But if they hit that and they remain in good standing in the program, they're actually guaranteed a spot in medical school in Texas. And so they have their own mini match among JAMP students.
Nice. And who qualifies for JAMP?
So there are a lot of different qualifications for that. You have to apply as a freshman or sophomore in college.
Okay.
And then you have to have SAT or ACT score higher than the average for the state.
Okay.
And those averages are published every year on on the JAMP website. You have to have an estimated family contribution of $8,000 or less on FAFSA application for freshman and sophomore year.
Okay.
And then you have to have the support of your advisor at your university. So the beauty about JAMP is that they've built a similar partnership among university advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have JAMP faculty directors. And for each one of the 67 participating undergraduate institutions, there is a faculty director there who's ready to help students with JAMP. And so students meet with those advisors and they're dedicated just to helping the JAMP students in verifying that their journey is kind of taking the right direction.
Nice.
Yeah. It's an amazing program.
Yeah. I would like that. Guaranteed admission.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a cap on how many students JAMP will accept. What does that look like?
It's about 100 students a year for the entire state of Texas.
So not a lot.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
It's an extremely competitive program.
Mm.
But the students that the program's producing are actually performing just as well as an average applicant to TMDSAS.
Okay.
And so it's really showing that it fills the gap from students who are economically disadvantaged in 2 to 3 years, they're able to come up to the level that a typical TMDSAS applicant would be at.
Shocker, you provide students resources
who'd have thought,
that
right?
they wouldn't normally be able to afford.
Yeah.
And they can do well.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And you'd be amazed, you know, that how much of an advantage these students take of these resources where they are turning around and scoring the best competitive MCAT scores.
Yeah.
They're really shining with leveraging the opportunities that they have with shadowing doctors.
Yeah.
And going back to their communities to continue shadowing. And
they're sponges.
It's amazing.
They just want to soak it in. They just haven't had the ability.
Yeah. And, you know, I worked with JAMP for about 6 years, and the doctors that program has produced, I've kept in touch with. It's just an amazing network of people.
Yeah.
And you know, it's JAMP definitely holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a great program. It's been around since 2003, and amid tumultuous legislative sessions, it stood the test.
Yeah.
And so it's a great program.
Because I'm sure with the JAMP, the advisors at the schools, are those funded slots through JAMP, or is the undergrad university paying for those advisors?
So as part of the funding for JAMP, JAMP provides funds for public universities to have a dedicated person there,
or that's awesome.
To provide additional enhancement resources for schools.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example with some of the universities in the Austin area. They actually host Dress for Success seminars. So they bring folks from like Men's Warehouse and, different clothing stores around the area and host like a fashion show for like.
Dude, why haven't you invited me to any of this awesome stuff?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's really amazing. You know, they have like etiquette dinner so that students can really
know which fork to start with.
You know, start with the outside and work your way. You know, I'm really connect personally with the mission of JAMP. Yeah, I grew up in a pretty impoverished neighborhood in El Paso, and working with those students, you know, it's not just giving them a pathway to becoming a doctor. It's also showing them a lot of things that we might take for granted. So for the summer programs, you know, we don't just send them to go learn and, you know, be working 24/7 for 5 weeks. You know, we send them to the opera. For a lot of students, they've never been to the opera.
Yeah.
Or they'll go and spend a day at Six Flags, you know, on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And they'll get together and network with each other. And what's great to see is that even as they're going through medical school and they're graduating and becoming physicians, that network continues. Mm. And so it's a really strong friendship and companionship that they form through JAMP.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything comparable that you know of outside of Texas like that?
No.
Yeah.
The closest might be university-specific pipeline programs. So I believe New York has a similar pipeline program.
They have Sophie Davis, right? The fifth pathway or something like that it's called. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, Scott and the executive director before him would always get phone calls from out of state trying to figure out
that's my question is how much do you kind of keep this close to your vest versus going to other states saying this is how you recreate it, look at the good that it's doing, not only the population that these future doctors are serving, but just turning around these students and showing them possibilities, whether or not they go into medical school or not. Yeah. It's just showing them culture, sending them to the opera, showing them all these possibilities of what's out there other than what they see in their neighborhood, and they don't see hope in that situation.
And we're always willing to collaborate, you know?
Yeah.
We would never hold something that
helps. We have the secret.
Yeah, we're here to help.
Yeah.
So anytime we get requests for, you know, coming by and taking a look at what the program's like or getting some more information on what's worked for us, what hasn't worked for us.
Have you ever spoken? Is that a word? Spoken?
Spoken.
Have you ever spoken at like the NAP, like their big national meeting, like letting advisors know like what's out there so that the advisors can go back to their schools and maybe put pressure on the state system?
We're actually active with both TAP, which is the Texas Association, and SAP, which is Southeastern Association, and NAP.
And NAP,
So right now I actually have a proposal sent out to NAP.
Nice.
To present next week.
I wanted to put one in and I just like, I'm not going to pull the trigger. I wanted to, but I'll be there.
Great.
I'll be there hanging out.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's in store for Texas Health Education Service? I know you guys are undergoing a lot of rebranding and kind of getting the message a little bit clearer potentially. What's in store?
It's a really exciting time because everything's in store. it's an organization still in its infancy, but obviously we're continuing with the Apply Magazine, the podcast is being rebranded from the TMDSAS podcast to Inside Health Education. Mm-hmm. And that's going to allow us to branch out beyond TMDSAS, maybe talk to other healthcare professionals, other professional schools, and really explore more of the academic and non-academic aspects of preparation. Not unlike what you already do, but we want to focus in on Texas.
Yeah. So why not Inside Texas Health Education?
It's too many words.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus, the Texas is already implied with Health Education Service.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We disagree.
A random browser on Apple Podcasts would not have that implication.
I think we've fixed that issue. Yeah, we'll talk later. But in the spring, we are bringing on board an advisor who's recently retired, and she'll be coming on to help us with developing more resources. So we are starting accountability teams for undergraduate students. So it's going to be a blueprint. You get together a team of five-ish people to get you started and making sure that everybody stays accountable. So we provide the blueprint and everything that you need, and the students just have to form the teams. And so
define what a blueprint is.
Yeah, so it's going to be like a syllabus of sorts. Mm-hmm. You're at this point in the application process or mm-hmm. in the preparation process, so we're going to pair you up with other folks who are similar stage, okay. or you already find a group of folks that are yeah. already in that stage, and we're going to help you by creating that blueprint of where you need to get to.
Little roadmap, little blueprint.
Yeah, blueprint, building in. Roadmap implies that it's just like one way.
Yeah.
Whereas blueprint is like, oh, okay, well,
I don't know. Apparently, this guy's never worked with an architect before, because architectural blueprints are pretty rigid.
They are, but you know, stuff can be amended there. So we're really excited for that blueprint that we're
going to. So lots of accountability built into there. Mm-hmm. And is that more for students or the advisors as well?
It's definitely for students, but if an advisor wanted to implement that at their own school, it'll be a resource that they can get from Health Education Service.
Cool.
And then we also are working with that advisor. We're going to create a virtual advisor video series mm-hmm. where she's going to sit down and answer questions that nice. You would walk in and ask an advisor. You know, it's like, nice. What are my chances of getting in? And then she'll go through and say,
yeah, I can't tell you.
Here are the stats.
No, that's the answer to that question. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy, I just checked the other day. I'm going to buy premedchecklist.com and send students to it. big word on there. There is no checklist.
Exactly. There's no cookie cutter. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we'll have to chat, cause I'm doing some things that may overlap with what you're doing.
Yeah.
See if we can collaborate.
And then of course, you know, we have 50 years of amazing data to move off of.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're building out the out-of-state student statistics and, mm-hmm. You know, developing resources around those, as well as continuing with non-traditional students and reaching out to them and making sure that they understand, you know, what competitive means as a non-traditional student.
That was something new that TMDS added to the application for this 2019 cycle, mm-hmm. 2020 cycle, was that do you consider yourself a non-traditional kind of question? Why did you add that?
It's twofold. The first one, we wanted to make sure that the schools put their money where their mouth was.
Okay.
We hear from the schools all the time how important it is for a non-traditional student mm-hmm. to apply and how desired non-traditional students were.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yep.
But there was no data to back it up.
Okay.
And so we had...
So not necessarily that you weren't seeing that, you just didn't have any data to support it.
There was nothing to support that.
Yep.
And so we had a proxy of using age to determine whether someone was non-traditional prior to that. But we thought it would be more beneficial for a student to identify themselves as non-traditional.
Yeah.
Because each journey is different. And so with that question, are you non-traditional? We also have a follow-up of explain why you decided to... labor yourself as non-traditional.
Yeah.
And that's given us some really great insights into a lot of students that we might not have considered, you know, maybe they're not using the traditional definition of non-traditional.
Yeah.
But you know,
my assumption is a lot of students are saying, I'm non-traditional because I took a gap year.
And you know what? What they did in that gap year is important.
Correct.
And there are spots in the application to discuss that.
Yeah.
But it allows an admissions committee member to say, oh, okay, I better pay attention to their essay where they talk mm-hmm. about this, or pay attention to that activity that they're discussing on here.
Yeah.
And so I think that's definitely a part of the application that helps non-traditional students specifically. The second point was also for data gathering. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that in including that question, we wouldn't get an inflated sense of or inflated number of students who claim that they were non-traditional. It's actually pretty much on par with last year when we were just using age.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. And so that also allows the schools to have that data on their end so that when an applicant transfers from being the responsibility of an admissions office to being part of student affairs, the student affairs office now has that data point as well, mm-hmm. and they can develop support resources around that, just as you would with, you know, LGBT data and the MCAS application. Mm-hmm. We do that with non-traditional students here. And in fact, based off of that and a lot of feedback that we've received, we're actually expanding the gender options in the TMDSAS application for next year.
Yeah.
So, slowly but surely.
Slowly. Is it going to be as high as Facebook with like 70 options or?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But we're, you know, we're really excited to promote inclusion and, you know, equity.
Which is awesome. Right. Texas normally considered a very conservative state, but
exactly.
We're in Austin, so you can't make it happen.
And you know what? It wasn't just Austin. It was a unanimous decision from all the schools to approve that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's good. AMCAS has a disadvantaged essay. Mm-hmm. Is that something you guys have thought about putting on your application service, or do you use your optional essay for that?
We usually defer a lot of that to the optional essay. A lot of the Texas schools have already started developing their own secondary applications, and they're not $300 plus applications, but they'll ask specific questions that might connect better to their mission. Mm. There really isn't a school that is seeking a disadvantage status necessarily. There are other aspects of the application that they focus on. And we do provide socioeconomic background information, but there really isn't anybody looking for disadvantage at this point. With that being said, you know, the deans get together twice a year to discuss the application, make sure that everything fits what they need it to look like. And so I wouldn't put it past them to include that in the future. But at this time, it's not included on TMDSAS.
Yeah. And I don't know if I would say it's more to seek out those students. And in my mind, it provides a lens of how they're interpreting what they're seeing.
Okay.
Potentially.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What else should we talk about?
What else?
So let's talk about TMDSAS. So what's the kind of the med school in a box? I want to see that. For TMDSAS, like what's the, like, number one mistake that you're just seeing over and over and over again?
Ooh, golly. We hear about all the mistakes all of the applicants do. Probably key among them is going to be confusion on how to enter courses.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really, for some reason, applicants encounter so many issues because they code their classes for TMDSAS.
They code them themselves, mm-hmm. just like the other application services.
Right. Yep. But there's some sort of disconnect there.
And by code, you mean science, non-science.
Yeah, so it's like biology one is biology class, and I got this grade, and that was the last time I took that course.
Yeah.
A lot of students face a lot of issues with that. Particularly became more apparent when we started using BCPM GPAs,
okay.
Which is beyond me because that's pretty commonplace with all the applications now. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the area that a lot of students trip up on. And what we do is we produce all the courses that we see. The folks here at TMDSAS will assess the syllabus to make sure that it hits certain points that are required.
Yeah.
Schools are prescribed to say, okay, this class will be considered a BCPM course or it will not. Or mm-hmm. this class will be considered a prerequisite course or it will not.
Yeah.
And I think we get that issue because we do the validation of the transcripts in-house. And so we're working with TMDSAS with the Health Education Service to make that message a little bit clearer, because I think that's something that a lot of students stumble on.
Why not? You have the data, right? You have all the historic data to say, I know that every student that went to UT Austin, like they put in Bio 101. I know that it's a BCPM.
Yeah.
Why not like populate that for them? Because you have the data and it's just pulling from a database.
The coding that would be involved with 8,000 applications times 120 credit hours.
It's easy.
You saw how small our office is.
Yeah.
You know, we try to keep it.
It's just a couple lines of code.
We try to keep it slim, slim around here.
Now, yeah.
When we find a discount coder that can help us.
All right, we'll talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you also have talked before about like students mistakenly submitting their application. How often does that happen?
Not too often.
Hey there.
Just want to interrupt you real quick. I'll be leaving in about an hour.
So okay. Let me down. Yeah. Oh, this is Dr. Gray.
Hi.
Hi.
Brian.
Matthew.
Matthew, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Matthew's the director of Team DCS.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Team DCS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about all the pain it causes students.
Yeah. It causes a lot of pain.
Yeah.
We like to inflict it.
So yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, it's great to meet you. Doing some filming and some
podcasts. Just chatting.
Yeah.
Chatting, trying to educate some students.
Yeah.
How mean Enrique is.
Yeah, he's pretty mean.
Vicious. Yeah. Vicious. Yeah. It was nice meeting you.
Good to meet you.
All right, thanks.
So with students submitting an application before they like spell check their essays or forget to put in their essays. Yeah. Is that super common?
It's not super common.
Okay, good.
But when it happens,
it's just very scary.
Devastating.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do.
You guys don't have a second chance button?
No, we don't.
Why not?
The schools have made it very clear that if an applicant is not thorough in their application,
yeah,
they're not,
no heart.
Not somebody that they want.
No heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
that's devastating.
It's so competitive
yeah.
to get into medical school.
Yeah.
And there are applicants who went through, proofread their essays,
yep.
and made sure that it wasn't a placeholder text. You know, I've seen where the application says "insert essay here,"
yeah.
or they just put a period just to get through that section,
yeah,
and they never put anything.
So, I have a very programmerish kind of mind.
Yeah,
right. If you could potentially, even though it doesn't happen a lot, go. And this literally is only a couple lines of code to say, okay, the student clicks submit, check the length of the personal statement. Oh, length is less than 1,000 characters, pop up a box. Like, it looks like your personal statement is not done. Are you sure you want to submit this?
Well,
possible.
I mean, you're a doctor. You're a doctor. Is there a line of code that's going to prevent you from overlooking something like that? I mean, this is an application that you've been working toward for several years at the point that you're applying to Team DCS. And I'm just sharing the perspective that the schools have shared.
Oh, I understand their perspective. I just don't,
you know,
I don't agree with it.
Sure, we could.
Yeah.
I mean, we can put in lines of code for everything. Yeah. But I don't... if we had... No, I don't see a single scenario.
Yeah.
Where something like that...
Nope, don't care.
Excuse. Yeah.
Banhammer. Poof. Right.
You know, I mean, with all due respect,
yeah,
there are 8,000 other applicants
who do
everything exactly as they were supposed to.
I hear you.
So that might be a bigger issue that's coming out.
Well, going back, right, if you think your background, right, how you grew up, mm-hmm. are these students coming from a background, from a disadvantaged background where they just don't understand the implications, where they don't see the big picture, where maybe their reading level isn't as good as it, whatever the case may be, right? That's
what.
Where.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Okay. That's not the case.
It's not at all.
Okay.
Because I've taken a look at the ones that
yeah.
I submit.
Yeah.
And that is definitely
it's not them.
The case.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'll just leave it at that. Just take your time. Take your time on the application.
Yeah. Step one, take your time. The optional essay for TMDSAS, I get lots of questions. Like, what should I be putting there?
Yeah.
Is it truly optional? Do you have data, like, what percentage of students actually don't fill it out?
I don't have it on hand.
I'm sure you could pull it.
But it'd
yeah.
be very interesting.
It'd be very interesting.
The optional essay is optional.
Asterisk. Yeah, asterisk. Yeah.
I'm going to say that it is not optional.
Correct.
Because it's an opportunity for students to talk about anything in the application that wasn't already asked,
mm-hmm.
to expand on a different section. You know, for example, with activities, you only have 150 characters to talk about an activity.
Yeah.
And if you want to make it a meaningful activity, you get, you know, X amount of additional characters. Maybe that's not enough to really say, you know,
yeah.
this is why I wanted to become a doctor.
Yep.
And maybe it's not the main reason to
yep.
be in one of the other sections, but that optional essay gives you that opportunity.
Yeah.
The TMDSAS application doesn't ask everything that it should ask.
And correct.
By design.
Yeah.
You know, the deans will sit down and go over the application. And as I mentioned, twice a year, they'll decide whether or not they want to move forward with a section, remove a section, add a section. And so it's that optional essay section is an opportunity for you to speak directly to an admissions committee member.
My biggest message lately has been, and I think since I've started, but I've started to kind of hone in on it and give it more context, is the student's story matters so much. And that optional essay is just another opportunity to further flush out their story. Mm-hmm. So as you said, I don't think anything optional throughout the whole medical school application process, whether it's a COMIS, AMCAS, or TMDSAS, is truly optional.
Or even like interview days, you know,
correct,
have the optional activities.
Yeah. Do them. Yeah. Do them. So with that said, right, telling your story, you mentioned the activity section, only 150 characters. Now, I can see, because I read so many applications, that most students are writing horrible things there, even on AMCAS and ACOMIS, where they have 700 or 600 characters. It's just a pile of flaming turd, right? And so I'm sure the medical schools are like, let's just cut down their ability to give us a big flaming pile of turd and only give 150 characters. But it's also for those who know how to tell their story and have a story to tell, it's limiting their ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why those boxes are not getting.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't tell your story and tell it in a concise way,
yeah,
you don't have your elevator pitch ready, you know, you're not ready to apply.
Yeah. So, what have you heard from medical schools as to kind of what they're hoping to see in an application? Obviously, stats aside, right? Yeah. They have to be good enough to get through the door. But in an application itself, what story are they looking for?
You know, they're really, I don't know if subscribed is the right word, but something that's coming to mind, subscribe to the core competencies defined by the AMC.
Yep.
And seeing those throughout the application. And the schools that have invited me to come see what their admissions committees are working through, it's very clear that the core competencies are important to them, but also the mission that the schools are promoting and the value statements that they have.
Yeah.
And those value statements I really want to include, because a lot of the schools in Texas will include values. For example, the Texas A&M system has established values that they've had for, you know, 100 plus years.
Yeah.
And those values are important for them as employees of the Texas A&M system, and are important for students of the Texas A&M system and as future alumni representing that. And so those are very important for those admissions committees to promote. So ultimately it comes down to tell your story in a way that really connects with an admissions committee member looking for X, Y, and Z that promotes their mission statement. Because ultimately you are promoting yourself to become an ambassador for that school.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're in, you know, you're no longer just Ryan Gray. You're Ryan Gray, student from blah, 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 or doctor who attended this medical school.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for students to put in the time to at least go to their website, read the mission statement.
Yes.
And see, you know, which competencies show up in their mission statements, and integrating them into their application as best as possible.
Yeah, we're working hard on a part of our website called Med School Reviews, where we have all of that data there, the mission statement, vision, links to all of the social media. And that's kind of what I tell students. They're like, all the mission statements, all the vision statements, they all sound the same. I'm like, well, go onto YouTube and see if they have an official YouTube channel. Go onto Instagram and search location for that school to see what students are doing at that school, and really put in the work, because where it shows up the most are those secondary essays, right? And schools hopefully are asking good specific secondary questions for that school specifically, and where students are going wrong is just copy paste, exactly, and not really tailoring it to each school's mission.
And it doesn't mean a full recreation of an essay.
Correct.
It's just reframing what you were already promoting
Yeah.
within the context of what that school's looking for.
Yeah. Sweet. Mm-hmm. So TMDSAS, Texas Health Education Service, how can students get more information? How can they learn more about it? If they're at a school, maybe that doesn't have an advisor, maybe they're a high school student trying to figure this stuff out, what should they be doing?
Definitely visit the websites. The TMDCS website is currently undergoing a massive refresh, and we are making all of the information about the application much more palatable. You know, it's so dry, but you know, we really make a strong effort to make sure that applicants get exactly what they need to know, including all the nuances of the application and figuring all that out. So TMDSAS.com is the website to go to.
And students, just to clarify, students, if they're 3 years out from applying, they can go to TMDSAS, open up an application, and play around. I mean, maybe it's not something you...
say that, but
yeah.
I'm not going to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can neither confirm nor deny.
Exactly.
Okay.
And also the Texas Health Education Service, we're focused on making the goal to becoming a doctor, dentist, or a veterinarian a clear pathway for students all the way from high school through the application. And we're hoping to expand as well into those careers. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be a full gamut of everything they need to do to prepare and come back and, you know, engage with other professional organizations and get the resources that you need. So TXHES is the website for that. And we also have online communities that we promote. I'm not going to say those right now because we don't have a solid name change for them, but those will be housed under the Health Education Service.
Okay.
As you saw, you know,
Facebook groups and stuff.
Office.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. Let's talk about this magazine.
Yeah.
Sweet. So I got the privilege and honor of being asked to contribute. What's the goal with the magazine?
The magazine is really to educate students on what the schools are looking for.
Is this one mine? Yeah, look at that. we can get some B-roll of this later.
And so the magazine was produced because, you know, we go to... all of these college fairs and talking to students, we repeat the exact same thing 100+ times. But when we have a magazine, we're able to engage advisors for the health professions. We're able to engage admissions officers, and you know, Dr. Gray, as well.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Nice brain. Sweet.
Yeah, this is the alpha version of the Apply magazine. It will be available in the spring. And this year, we actually integrated some success stories from students so that they get to tell, you know, what their journey's been like, what their experiences were like in professional school and leading up to it. So we thought that might be a nice thing to bring into that magazine.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Those success stories are what give students hope. Mm-hmm. Which is great.
And then the stats are what humbles us all.
The students who are potentially at a school where this isn't distributed, how can they get a copy?
Yeah.
Is there a digital version only?
Yes, there are. Yeah. They're available both on the TMDSAS website and the Texas Health Education Service website.
Nice. Now, you mentioned Texas Health Education Service, med, dental, and vet.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any future for PA, PT, adding other health professions in there?
I mean, it comes through because of TMDSAS, where those partnerships are already built in.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, TMDSAS is the best application service of them all.
Obviously.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if schools started switching over. But honestly, we're in talks with some other health profession schools.
Mm-hmm.
To expand beyond just medical, dental, and veterinary.
Cool. Yeah. Breaking news. Awesome.
But yeah, you know, Team Diaz is good at what they do. You know, all things aside, we've been doing this for a while, and we listen to both the schools who have specific needs that they need in the application, and we provide a centralized service for them.
Yeah.
And also for applicants to make sure that they're getting the best opportunity to tell their story and to mm-hmm. be seen and heard in the application.
I know what I want to talk about. Uh-oh. The match.
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to sit up straight for
you. So Texas medical schools, the application to medical school, right, looking at from the outside, the very beginning part of it, similar to everywhere else, just it's a separate application service. Mm-hmm. On the back end, though, you have a match process. Yeah. Why? First, let's explain the match. What in as briefly as possible, like sure. what is the med school match?
It's very similar to the national residency match.
Yep. Is it the same algorithm? Do you know?
I can't confirm that.
Okay. which is an award-winning algorithm. they won the Nobel Prize for that.
And so what the match does is it pairs students to schools on a one-to-one basis mm-hmm. in that applicants go in and fill out which schools they prefer to match to. And then the schools will create a list of who they prefer to be added to their school.
Yeah.
And so the algorithm will pair students until the max number of spots are filled. Mm-hmm. And the schools will each set those. And then that essentially gives applicants a match.
Now, so the schools will set how many they want to match
right.
in the
programming behind the scenes.
Yes. Yeah. And this is outside of the pre-match. The pre-match is one-on-one, what people would consider a normal way that a school accepts a student.
Yeah.
Kind of.
So what the pre-match says is, hey, we're going to rank you high enough where if you rank us high enough, you'll match to us. There's like a sneak.
So it's still a little bit of a match there.
It's still
potentially. It's not a direct.
It really empowers the applicant to say, well, I really want to match here, so I'm going to put them as one, and I know I'm getting in.
Okay.
Or I have a pre-match offer here. Maybe I might be able to shop around a little bit still to these other schools and have that as my backup.
And from my research, a student who pre-matches still goes through the regular match process. If you pre-match, you still have to fill out a whole rank list. And if the school that you pre-matched at is your number one, you put one and you're basically done, correct? Because the software says this student matched at his or her number one, they're done.
Yeah.
They're out of the match process at that point. And then for students who haven't matched at their number one, they're still in the process waiting for some movement potentially.
For any school higher than the one that they've matched to.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if I ranked school three, if I ranked a school that I pre-matched at as number three, I'm still in play for school two and one.
Yeah. Does the school see that student has ranked them as number two or number one?
Schools do not see the student.
Okay. So they just have their potential list of students. They don't know. Do they do they push a button and it goes, like this student hasn't ranked you? Yeah,
it does not.
Yeah.
Every student that gets interviewed has to rank each of the schools that they interviewed at.
Correct. But what if a school likes a student, but the student didn't like the school? The school accepts that student, mm-hmm. but they're lower down on the list than where they already have a match.
If that student ranked at a school higher, then the student just falls off of the list for that school.
So they will fall off the list. Okay. So that student's not available. Okay.
And also a student can withdraw their application from a school that, maybe they went to go in and said, oh geez, this is not where I want to go. They can withdraw their application.
Okay.
And even if they get a pre-match offer, they can reject the pre-match offer if they decide to go somewhere else.
So the schools theoretically know the students who they have available to accept are potentially likely to come to them because they're ranked higher than where the student is already accepted.
The schools won't know how they were ranked.
But at least if the student's available, it's higher than wherever they're at now. Right? Because you just said if it's lower, they'll fall off the list for that school.
Right.
They won't know if they're only one above or number one.
And also a student won't know if they're next on the list.
Correct.
Or if they're 100 away.
Cool.
Yeah.
Why do it that way versus how the other application services work?
I hate to use this answer, but we've always done it this way.
Yep.
It's been something that's been well established in TMDSAS, and it's worked fine for X amount of years here. And so there's never been a discussion about moving away from the match. Now, the match is only for medical applicants.
Okay.
Everyone else does the rolling admissions just as it practices nationally.
Okay. Is there one of the arguments for the residency match is that it helps distribute talent, mm-hmm. right? If you didn't have a match, then the places where people want to go are going to be the most competitive places. They're going to offer more money to recruit talent yeah. versus having the match to spread out that that talent pool. Is there a similar thought with the match here? Is that students are kind of distributed a little bit more evenly?
Absolutely. In fact, that's why we moved up the pre-match offers this past year. They used to be mid-November. Now they're October 15th, mm-hmm. which is the same date that the schools can reach out to out-of-state students. And so that allows the schools to be able to start recruiting students that are highly desirable to their school. And so the match really does, you know, provide that equity among the schools. Mm-hmm. We don't, you know, hyperload one school with top talent students, but also gives everybody an opportunity to match wherever, you know, they might end up at.
Nice. You might not know this, but I've talked to a few students who are Texas residents applying out of state, mm-hmm. and they're pretty competitive. I mean, not hyper competitive, but decent stats. And they get some traction in the state of Texas, but not outside, where I would assume they would. Do you have any data to support potentially outside of Texas schools, like passing on Texas applicants because they're like, oh, they're from Texas, they want to stay in Texas, let's just not even bother with them?
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, outside of Texas, each school manages their own stats.
Yeah.
So we'd have to partner with every medical school in the country to find out that.
Get yeah. to it.
I know. Here we go.
Yeah. So that would be considered, a lot of students think it's this huge conspiracy theory. I don't know if you've heard this term, the whole yield protection,
yeah.
where we only have a certain number of interview spots. Let's use it on students who we hope want to come here and not are just potentially applying as a safety school.
Yeah. I will say, you know, Texas students definitely find their way around the country, you know,
yeah.
definitely with neighboring states, in Oklahoma, in New Mexico, in Louisiana, there's a strong presence of Texas students. And so I would definitely say that, I guess it's a geographical thing.
Yeah. But actually, here's a question about data. I love data. Okay. For students who you know have been accepted to a Texas medical school, mm-hmm. do you have data on how many of them go out of state, even with an acceptance to in-state school?
We don't, because we wouldn't know the reason why they withdrew their application.
Okay. Can send an email.
Right.
Yeah. But that's a question.
1,000 students there.
So the follow-up question would be, do you have the data? Have you looked at the data that shows this student has an acceptance but still withdrew their application? And there could be 1,000 reasons, right? Yeah. A death in the family, I'm going to start med school next year, whatever it may be. That'd be interesting to look at.
Yeah, we could definitely take a look at that.
Yeah.
The issue is statuses change across time.
Yeah.
So an acceptance today is a rejection tomorrow, withdrew application tomorrow. And so it would just require us to get a snapshot.
Yeah.
Of exactly when that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And since these events happen all throughout the application cycle, that's quite a lot of data to sift through.
Yeah. Or even once school starts getting like final rosters from the med schools, mm-hmm. to go back and put that as a data point in the school, in the students' record, mm-hmm. to see. Like actually matriculated.
I don't know if you can see, but the little cards in my head are already starting to spin. So I'm like, I think we can figure something out.
We should talk more.
Yeah, we definitely will.
That's the kind of thing I think about.
More data.
More data. Awesome.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Enrique Hasso, the Associate Director and Podcast Host at the Texas Health Education Service. Now, if you don't know about their podcast, they actually just rebranded from the TMDSAS podcast to the Inside Health Education podcast. And that podcast is on this MedEd Media Network that all of our podcasts are on, which you can find at mededmedia.com. Again, Enrique's podcast is the Inside Health Education podcast. Go check it out. Learn about the TMDSAS and everything that the Texas Health Education Service is doing for the students and applicants to Texas medical, dental, and veterinary schools, as well as some more schools coming. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.